Good afternoon. My name is Chris, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pay for Success Social Impact Finance South Carolina Home Visiting to Improve Health and Early Childhood Outcomes, hosted by Ready Nation and the Human Capital and Economic Opportunity Global Working Group. Dr. Rob Dugger, you may now begin your conference.
Well, thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. This is Rob Dugger. I'm one of the co-founders of Ready Nation, and along with two great guys, Jim Heckman and Stephen Berloff, I co-chair the Human Capital and Economic Opportunity Working Group at the University of Chicago. So on today's call, we're going to focus on the South Carolina Early Health Project. This is the third in a series of calls, conference calls, on social impact finance as it's applied to early childhood. In the first call, you recall, we talked about the general theory of the subject. In the second call, we focused specifically on the early learning social impact finance project now underway in Salt Lake City, and today we're going to focus on the project of the Institute for Child Success that is getting underway in South Carolina. We're going to hear from four people. I'll quickly give you a bit of information about them. Erica Brown is a Government Innovation Fellow at the Harvard School of Government. She's a member of the Social Impact Lab there. And her role is to assist states in developing social impact finance projects. I'll let her describe more about that work. I'll point out that she's done a wide variety of kind of amazing things in the Dominican Republic, in Kampala, Uganda, as well as wild and woolly place of Rhode Island. So we'll hear from Erica first. Second will be Brett Mabry. Brett is Vice President for Early Childhood Projects at the Duke Endowment. He's had a long career in this area. He's been got a Master's of Health Administration from Duke, Bachelor at Chapel Hill, was a Director of Patient Care Services at the Health Corporation of America's Ferry Hospital, Manager at Ernst & Young, Southeast Management Consulting Group. He joined the Duke Endowment in 1992, and in 1998 he was named Director of Child Care, and in 2009 he became Vice President. We'll also hear from Joe Waters, kind of a force of nature in this early childhood social impact finance world. He is a remarkable guy. He is Vice President of the Institute for Child Success. He became Vice President May 11th. After completing a year and a half as a minister at the Prince of Peace Catholic Church in Taylor, South Carolina, he has a degree from Duke University in Divinity, has run for Congress, is a kind of remarkable force in getting this kind of work underway. Megan Golden will speak last, and she'll work through and lay out the a remarkable feasibility study that the Institute for Child Success has sponsored with support from the Duke Endowment, which lays out the economics of probable success of such a project. She has a remarkable background. She is a lawyer at Skadden Arps at the Neighborhood Defender Service. She has a BA in political science from Brown and JD magna cum laude from New York University School of Law. She's worked a lot of places, the Vera Institute, and she was Director of Planning and Government Innovation at the Vera Institute of Justice, where she worked in partnership with Government Implementation Innovations in Criminal Justice, Juvenile Justice, Child Welfare, and School Safety. So those are the four people we'll hear from, and let's go ahead and get started. Let's hear first, if you would, Erica, go ahead and just talk with us about this project and your perspective on it and your thoughts on its success.
Sure, Rob, thank you for that kind introduction. And I will give a brief overview of the project that is underway, currently being developed here in South Carolina. Joe and Megan are going to talk a lot about the feasibility study that was really the groundwork for this project. So they have a lot of the interesting details. But I'm just to provide some background information about the state's interest in social impact bonds. We call it pay for success financing here in South Carolina, and why we're exploring pay for success for home visiting here in the state. So the state of South Carolina, led by the Department of Health and Human Services, which is the Medicaid agency here in the state, became interested in pay for success as an opportunity to create a sustainable stream of financing for high quality, high impact interventions that would allow us to fulfill our mission of purchasing the most health for our citizens in need at the least possible cost to the taxpayer. So that's kind of DHHS's mission statement. And the particular interest in South Carolina was in using Pay for Success to scale interventions that support a really unique initiative here in South Carolina called the Birth Outcomes Initiative. And that was a multi-stakeholder public-private initiative between the Medicaid agency here in the state and private insurers to improve birth outcomes. So through that initiative that began in 2011, the state has identified child and maternal health as a priority and thought that pay-for-success financing would be a great way to make more progress in that area. So Megan and Joe, again, we'll talk about the feasibility study and how that led us to begin exploring home visiting programs in the state. And, you know, after that feasibility study was completed, the state here at DHHS and in partnership with the governor's office has done some additional research and some work to begin developing this project. And as I said, we are kind of in the development stages as, you know, currently and continue to progress. And we'll be moving forward with the Pay for Success project and ideally have a project launched by the end of this year. So that's kind of the 1,000-level foot overview of the project. And again, after Megan and Joe speak, if there are specific questions that I'm able to answer, I will be happy to do that at the end of the call. But I think Megan and Joe are going to give you most of the interesting details about this.
Great. Thanks, Erica. Rhett, can you tell us, why did you write a check to support this?
Thanks, Rob, for the introduction. Just let me take just a second and give you a little background on the Duke Endowment. We've been around since 1924. We support four areas in North Carolina and South Carolina: higher education, health care, Methodist churches, and child care, which is essentially children who come into the child welfare system. We're about a $3 billion foundation and give away about $150 million a year. Historically, our program areas of higher education, health care, child care, et cetera, we've almost operated as four separate foundations. And back in 2007, 2008, we began to look at points of intersection where we could create some synergy by and have an effect on health care and child welfare by doing projects together within the endowment across our program areas. And we quickly settled in on the early childhood space as a kind of a nexus point or a intersection point for a lot of our work. And after about a year and a half of investigation of trying to figure out what were the best interventions, we selected Nurse Family Partnership as a program to advance in Carolinas. Nurse Family Partnership is a home visiting program for first-time low-income mothers, and essentially the visits occur prenatally while the mother's pregnant, essentially once a week and about twice a week until the child's 2 years of age. And our original visioning, we saw Nurse Family Partnership as kind of the cornerstone piece of an early childhood continuum that we might build over time in North Carolina and South Carolina. The reason we selected Nurse Family Partnership was because of its evidence. There have been three randomized control trials dating back to the 1970s in Elmira, New York, the 1980s with a primarily African-American population in Memphis, Tennessee, in the 1990s with a population that included Latino families in Denver, Colorado. And across those three randomized control trials, there were six outcomes common to each of those trials, including improved school readiness, a decrease in childhood injuries, increase in maternal self-sufficiency, meaning the mother either moved to a job or furthered her education, a decrease in subsequent births, better spacing of subsequent births, and improved prenatal health. So those are the outcomes that attracted us to this intervention, and that was the research that attracted us. NFP, Nurse Family Partnership, has been replicated across 42 states. They've got two cost-benefit studies that suggest that for about every dollar that you spend on the program, you get about a $4 to $6 return. And importantly for us, we were also impressed by the National Service Office, whose sole purpose of is located in Denver, but their sole purpose is to make sure the Nurse Family Partnership gets replicated from one site to the next consistently with fidelity to the model. So for those reasons, the evidence, the infrastructure in place, the outcomes, the cost-benefit studies, we as a foundation became very interested in trying to replicate this program in the Carolinas, in North Carolina and South Carolina. We were able to partner with other funders in the two states, including the K.B. Reynolds Charitable Trust, Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation of North Carolina, Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation of South Carolina. Also, their public sector agencies, the Division of Public Health in North Carolina puts about $2 million a year into this project. We're also partnering with South Carolina First Steps, and South Carolina's Children's Trust Fund is a great partner, and they're a conduit to the McVee funding, which is the federal money that's being targeted to home visiting. In addition to the outcomes I just cited that were achieved in the randomized control trials, we've also done a comparison analysis in South Carolina around birth outcomes, and we've been able to establish, based on our analysis, that our Nurse Family Partnership mothers are half as likely to have a preterm delivery, half as likely to have a low birth weight baby, and a third as likely for a baby to be admitted to a NICU, to a neonatal intensive care unit. So there are a lot of good data and a lot of collaboration that's taking place in the Carolinas. The outcomes that I just cited on the ground obviously have economic consequences, and those economic consequences, such as avoiding placement in the NICU, in the NICU, led us to partner with the Institute for Child Success and Joe Waters, who you'll hear from briefly in a few minutes, to basically help to underwrite a feasibility study to understand how we could construct social impact bonds or a pay-for-success structure around expanding Nurse Family Partnership. And so the Duke Endowment put in $25,000, the Department of Health and Human Services in South Carolina, which has been a great partner in this whole effort, also put in $25,000 for the feasibility study. And the feasibility study that Megan and Joe will talk about in a moment led to our being able to contemplate an expansion of Nurse Family Partnership in South Carolina from serving somewhere just south of 1,000 first-time low-income mothers a year currently to some number 4 to 5 times that amount in the next 5 years using a pay-for-success financing structure where if the savings are documented from the outcomes achieved, then investors will get repaid plus some nominal interest. And again, I think Joe and Megan will talk more about that. Just to sum up, our interest in this pay-for-success as a foundation, our interest is in this pay-for-success structure comes down to several points. One, we think it's a positive in that it brings non-traditional investors, namely commercial banks, into this nonprofit space, and those are dollars that we don't typically see in trying to replicate social interventions. We also think this opportunity, pay-for-success structure, gives us an opportunity to test an effective intervention at scale. Nurse Family Partnership, as I said, is in 42 states, but it's usually in pockets of 100 mothers in one community, 100 mothers in another community. And I think it'll be important if we move forward with this in South Carolina to see if we go to a deeper penetration level, if Nurse Family Partnership can actually begin to affect community-level data. And I think that's something that's particularly exciting about this. I also think the pay-for-success structure models for government, this idea of greater accountability to outcomes, As I said earlier, pay for success is predicated on measuring outcomes, calculating the cost savings resulting from those outcomes. And if the Duke Endowment is part of the capital stack, we will no doubt be a subordinate lender. And what we would probably do for any dollars that might accrue to us, we probably want to structure some arrangement where those dollars get redirected back into the intervention as opposed to repaying us dollars that may accrue to us.
Mm-hmm.
There's some risk. I've got a couple more statements. I'll wrap up. There's some risk to the foundation, obviously, but some of that's mitigated by the fact that we would be putting charitable dollars, not investment dollars, in the capital stack. And obviously, we've got concerns about scale. It's going to take hiring more than 100 nurses to ramp this up, to ramp up the service. And that's obviously going to be a challenge. There are also, when you have early childhood interventions and investments, some of the benefits accrue beyond a typical investment horizon or investment window. So trying to navigate that and manage that, I think, is also going to be a challenge. But let me stop there, and I'd be happy to answer questions when we get to the Q&A.
That is absolutely terrific wrap-up, and thanks for your leadership and the Duke Endowment for being willing to just move into this area and be an innovator and willing to put, even though it's a relatively small amount of money, you put money at risk on an untried project, and all of us deeply appreciate your commitment. I want to remind everyone that the next part of this discussion is about a feasibility study. That feasibility study is posted on the Human Capital Economic Opportunity Working Group website, the event page for this event. You just go to hceconomics.org, that's human capital, hceconomics.org, and look for the events. You click on the events, and this one is the top of the list, and click on that, and you'll just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the mention in kind of yellow print of the feasibility study. Click on the feasibility study, and you'll be able to follow very easily what Joe and Megan are going to be talking about. So, Joe, let me turn it over to you, and we'll get underway.
Great. Thank you, Rob. Really appreciate it, and really appreciate you hosting this call. I want to thank, as well, Erica Brown and Kirsty Bree for their leadership in South Carolina Fighting Initiative. The Institute for Child Success, as was mentioned by Rhett, was thrilled to partner on the feasibility study with the Duke Endowment with South Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services. The Institute for Child Success was founded back in 2010 as a joint initiative between the Greenville Health System and the United Way of Greenville to South Carolina to focus exclusively on systems-level issues affecting children prenatal to age 5 in South Carolina. So we... In the way that Rhett described relative to the Duke Endowment, we are also interested in the intersection of health and education, child welfare, and so forth for children 0 to 5 in South Carolina. We were very interested, thanks actually in part to Rob's leadership, in exploring pay-for-success financing to improve outcomes for South Carolina's children. We worked with Megan Golden, my colleague, who will speak to you in just a minute, to explore the feasibility of using pay-for-success financing to scale and sustain the Nurse Family Partnership Program in South Carolina. We recognize that there are great needs in our state. South Carolina is a poor and under-resourced state, and a child born here faces a very challenging future. On most indices of child well-being, we tend to rank very low. Yet, we know that there are proven methods out there to improve outcomes for our children. Home visiting programs are one example. And with Nurse Family Partnership in particular, as Rhett mentioned, there's a tremendous return on investment for investing in that program. South Carolina, through the leadership of the Duke Endowment, Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation, the Children's Trust, First Steps, and others, has implemented many of these home visiting programs, but nowhere near to the scale that we need to make the impacts to really change the trajectory for our state. Nurse Family Partnership, for example, serves in 2012 only 568 of 11,500 eligible high-risk mothers each year. And government, as in the rest of the country, is very stretched, focused on remediation and rehabilitation, and is not able to really get the breathing space, budgetary breathing space that they need to shift focus of funding on prevention. And so we feel that Pay for Success would address both the outcomes that we face and that we want in South Carolina, and also the need to scale proven programs. I would just add, we have tremendous leadership from the state, in addition to the leadership of our funders and other home visiting partners. Governor Haley's leadership in seeking the support of the Harvard Social Impact Bond Technical Assistance, which has brought us Erica, and the leadership of Tony Keck, who is our state's director of Medicaid, to explore this, has really just been phenomenal. And we're pleased to be among the states that are leading the country in Pay for Success financing. And so with that, I'm now going to turn it over to my colleague, Megan Golden, who conducted the feasibility study, to walk you through what she found. Megan?
Thanks, Joe. So I'm going to start by asking you to imagine a world where every high-risk mother in South Carolina learns to read to her child every day, to use positive parenting when the child misbehaves, and to provide healthy food and exercise. A world where high-quality medical care, child care, and early education are the norm. And now imagine that local banks, community foundations, civically minded individuals, national foundations, and investment banks put up capital for proven early childhood interventions to accomplish this. And government paid them back several years later after it saw evidence that the programs were making children better off. Could the state of South Carolina reach a new normal where it has robust early childhood programs and fewer children in special education, foster care, and prison? Is that feasible? That was the question that I was trying to answer for the Institute for Child Success and the Duke Endowment and the state of South Carolina when I conducted the feasibility study that Joe and others referenced. We began the feasibility study in January 2013 and completed it last August. And so I will give you a brief summary of what we found. Now, do people actually have the slides in front of them that Rob just pointed us to? Is there a Rob, should I assume that people have it in front of them?
Yes. If everyone has gone to hceconomics.org and clicked on the events button up at the top, they'll be taken to the events page, and this is the first event. You click on that. It'll take you to the detail for this conference call and the study that you're talking about is listed. It's called Using Pay for Success Finance to Improve Outcomes for South Carolina's Children, Results of a Feasibility Study. Click on that, and it'll take you to the study. The slides that Megan is talking about, the study is 68 pages. The slides begin on page 9 or 10.
So I will refer to some of the slides, but if you weren't able to get them in front of you, I will try not to refer too much to them. So to give away the conclusion to begin with, though, we did find that Pay for Success financing is a feasible way to improve outcomes for South Carolina's children. So how did we get there? You've heard from Joe Waters that South Carolina ranked 45th in overall child well-being in the country, and from Erica that the government had an initiative to try to improve birth outcomes. And you heard from Rhett that home visiting programs are one example of effective childhood interventions, early childhood interventions that can improve outcomes for children. And the Nurse Family Partnership is a specific home visiting intervention that has a lot of strong evaluation research behind it, showing that it significantly improves the health and development of children and mothers. So what we did was we took a look at how that program is implemented now in South Carolina. And if you can scroll forward to a few slides, one that I think is slide 7, it talks about proven outcomes of the nurse-family partnership. And we reviewed the research, the evaluations that have been done on the nurse-family partnership, and saw well-documented outcomes in terms of preterm birth, visits to the emergency room, child abuse and neglect, and short-term outcomes in terms of reduced youth crime. And also looked at, Rhett mentioned this, that some cost-benefit analyses of the nurse-family partnership and saw that the benefits far exceed the cost. Now, when you look at this pay-for-success financing, there's kind of two ways of...
All right, let me interrupt just for a second. That's slide 17 in the document that people have on the website.
Okay.
Yep, so they're with you now. Nurse Family Partnership Benefits Far Exceed Cost, slide 17.
Okay. I think we're going to go through this too much about the slide. So types of cost-benefit analysis look at. One is the overall benefit society as compared to the cost, which I think we know are great and the multiples of the cost of a program like the Nurse Family Partnership. But then there's a subset of that, which is the government savings that those outcomes produce. And so this analysis looked at what does government save if we have fewer preterm births and fewer visits to the emergency room and less child abuse, et cetera. And we found that government saves about $19,000 for every $7,754 spent to serve one family for up to 2.5 years in the nurse family partnership. Now, Joe mentioned that in South Carolina, there are about 11,500 very poor women who give birth to their first child each year, and that's the very high-risk target population that the Nurse Family Partnership serves. And yet they have last year were only able to serve 568 new families. So there's a big gap between the need for the program and how many people are actually getting it now. So given that, we looked at the data from the different counties in South Carolina, and we looked at the capacity of the service providers and came up with a proposed expansion strategy. And we then spelled out by site and by county how many new families the Nurse Family Partnership could realistically serve in each expansion site. We reviewed this with the Nurse Family Partnership staff as well as government officials. And through this analysis, we were able to determine that if South Carolina were to expand the Nurse Family Partnership to serve 2,750 new families, it would cost about $21 million, and government would save about $52 million. So that would be a net savings of $31 million, and almost two-thirds of those savings would come from Medicaid. So that's $5 in savings for every $2 spent, which creates a pretty attractive investment opportunity. Now, I should say that these savings are from a whole range of outcomes, but in designing a financing mechanism, you need to have specific metrics to determine payment. So we focused on early childhood health, which, as Erica mentioned, is especially important to the government of South Carolina and also has the advantage of being relatively easy to measure because health data is systematically kept in the state's databases. So then we put together a little picture of how it could work, and we figured that if the Nurse Family Partnership served 2,750 new families raised in over 3 years, that you could develop a pay-for-success financing deal. State would choose one or two health outcomes, and it would pay only if there are improvements in those outcomes as compared to a control group or a matched comparison group. And there's usually an external evaluator that actually does that analysis. And if you looked at outcomes like preterm birth that happen in the first couple years, that within about 6 years, which is a good investor's time frame, you could evaluate success for kind of almost 3,000 new families. So then we went into the specifics of preterm birth outcomes and looked at what the current rates are in the counties where we were proposing expansion and looked at what the projected changes that's based on the research. And the research shows that the Nurse Family Partnership can reduce preterm births by about 27%. So we applied that to the different counties to show how the outcomes could be improved by this expansion. And we found that it really represents healthier children, and they need less medical care, they do better in school, and they lead more productive lives. So the final step was the financing structure. And we figured that there would probably need to be a mix of philanthropic and commercial capital, because although the state and government in general in this field is often willing to pay for outcomes, they're not willing to pay the type of return that the market would demand given the risk involved in a large-scale expansion of a social services program. And so we talked to some of the big intermediaries in the field, Social Finance US and Third Sector Capital Partners, as well as a business school professor at the University of South Carolina that's an expert in finance, and gave them the scenario and said, well, could you come up with a viable financing mechanism that might mix some philanthropic and commercial investment up front? And they looked at the data, and they came up with, I think, three or four different possible ways of structuring the financing. And our goal in the feasibility study wasn't to actually structure a deal, but rather to determine whether it was feasible. And that was enough to allow us to conclude that pay-for-success financing could feasibly be used to scale up the Nurse Family Partnership and improve outcomes for children in South Carolina.
Megan, that's terrific. Are you ready to face the questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. That was I've been through this many times, and each time I'm really quite impressed by the scope of what you and Joe and obviously the Duke Endowment with Rhett's help, and now trying to go through the implementation with Erica's help and others. It's really quite a project. Well, I have a question for Joe Waters and Megan. Can you talk a little bit about the process of implementation, how the this might evolve working with sort of the new, one of the, or other of the new category of social impact investment bankers? How will that work, do you think?
Thanks for that question, Rob. Megan, do you want to take a first stab at that?
Well, I think that this is a brand new field, and so there are now four of these papers that have been completed in the U.S. Three of them are with one with Goldman Sachs, and one with Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and then there's other investors as well. But I think that there's no set way of going about this. I think we're all each project is kind of paving the way for the field. So I don't know that I have a best answer to that question.
Okay.
The only thing that I would add to that, Rob, is the tremendous interest that was generated both here in South Carolina and from national folks, who were interested in South Carolina, from just doing the feasibility study itself. And so I think that that level of interest is promising and it's exciting, and certainly something that we felt as we were going through the feasibility process here in the state. And I would add, I was impressed by the level of willingness from those potential investors, or folks who are interested in investing in this space, their willingness to roll up their sleeves and to really dig in and contribute to the analysis and offer us feedback and input and insight. So I think the interest is there, and it's tremendous, and it's really exciting.
Excellent. I know that in Virginia we've looked at the South Carolina project very carefully. We have now begun a process of monthly meetings of people to look at what possibilities there are to mesh the the unique characteristics of Virginia Medicaid and managed health, the possibilities of not only focusing on nurse family partnership, but the other varieties of prenatal or home visiting with strong prenatal emphasis to capture those reductions in neonatal intensive care and subsequent emergency room visits. There seems to be a range of those kinds of programs. Do you consider using anything other than nurse family partnership in South Carolina?
So we did consider it. As you will see when folks go through the slide deck, there are a number of home visiting programs that are implemented in the state. We chose Nurse Family Partnership for three primary reasons. The ability of that program to achieve birth outcomes consistent with the state's interests, the evidence for Nurse Family Partnership, and the cost-benefit analyses that have been done. And then thirdly, the support of the Nurse Family Partnership National Service Office staff to go through the feasibility process with us, to be open to exploring a new and, for the program intervention, somewhat risky idea, and to explore all of that with us. And then I would also say that NSO, National Service Office team, is going to be there, should the state move ahead with this, to support the implementation. And so I think that we have a better chance with Nurse Family Partnership, given their willingness throughout this process, to make sure that things go as smoothly as we all want them to go with the implementation and the scale up as well. So, certainly we are interested in pay for success financing for a range of early childhood interventions. For those reasons, we felt that NFP was just a good place to start for our state. But certainly we have already been in conversations with program models, with interventions, to explore the applicability of PFS financing to other models as well in South Carolina.
Chris, do we have anyone who's got any questions?
Yes, you do have a question from Flavio Cunha.
Hi, so this is really exciting. I don't know if you guys can hear me. I hope you can.
Flavio, we can hear you loud and clear. It's good to have you on the call.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really fascinated with the work that you guys are doing. Two things that came that I thought about. One is the issue of the evaluation, and one thing that I'm doing in Brazil is a version of a home visitation program, and I'm working with the government of a state in Brazil. And the way we are interested in conducting the analysis is by exploring the issue that the expansion. That the program has to expand, they have to hire people, so they cannot deploy the program at all places at the same time. So instead of randomizing people, we are randomizing locations. And at different points in time, different localities receive access to the program. And we keep track of the localities in which the programs have not been in place in order for us to measure outcomes. A second question is related to the question that Rob just asked. One of the things that I am a big supporter of the Nurse Family Partnership Program. At the same time, it's a program that only serves a certain population. So expanding towards other populations would be extremely interesting. But I worry about whether, for example, someone who's receiving, if there are too large a range of programs, you can imagine that one person will receive 3-4 different types of interventions. Then how would we, in the end, learn how much of the impact is because of a given intervention? So any thoughts about that?
And let me just introduce Flavio for you a little bit. Flavio is a student of Jim Heckman's. He's a PhD from the University of Chicago and now teaches at the University of Pennsylvania and is one of the leading sort of scholars in the area of early child development. I think he's got an upcoming paper in one of the top American journals on that deals specifically with women's mothers' expectations regarding their own children and how interventions which affect those expectations affect the life success of the kids. So that's a bit on Flavio, a remarkably talented guy.
Thank you for the kind words, but if my mom had heard you, she would be so proud of me.
Yes. And if your father had, he wouldn't have believed it.
I can tackle the first part of the question on the evaluation design. I think that what you described sounds really interesting and perhaps like a design that might work for one of these transactions, which is that you were randomizing by location as you were able to to implement the expansion. And the evaluation has been a very important part of the transactions that have happened so far, but also a work in progress. Some jurisdictions have used historical comparison groups without kind of a random assignment. But the New York State, for example, is using a random assignment design on the individual level. And there's a tension between coming up with the most rigorous method possible, which can be somewhat expensive and difficult to implement, and also could mean that not everybody who is eligible gets served because some of them get randomly assigned to the control group, and coming up with something that is feasible, maybe less expensive, but maybe not quite as reliable in the outcomes. And so thus far in the U.S., different jurisdictions are striking that balance at different places, and your design sounds like a really interesting option to look at.
Yeah, and this is Joe Waters again. I might tackle the second piece of the question there. That, certainly nurse family partnership serves a very narrow subset of all mothers. And our focus, certainly started with NFP for this study, but we recognize that we need a continuum of services and programs that serve children and their families. NFP needs to be a part of that continuum, and certainly we're interested in exploring pay-for-success models, as I mentioned, for other programs and other interventions, and certainly programs and interventions beyond home visiting, certainly. So maybe Rhett has, I know that they have toyed with this a bit. At the endowment. So you might have some thoughts as well.
Thank you, Joe. And I'll agree with you. We don't see nurse family partnership as a panacea or the silver bullet, or once we get that in place, a lot of these challenges go away. In fact, we think it should be part of a continuum, and that was our original conception of this idea. And we go back and forth on this. I guess our thinking is that you need to get a stake in the ground. You need and it needs to be driven by an intervention that's got credible evidence. And among the home visiting programs, my belief is that Nurse Family Partnership has the strongest evidence. So once we get that in the ground, figure out a way to get it sustained in South Carolina, then we start building on that building block, if you will, and trying to add other services in the continuum that have strong evidence and make that make sense for serving populations either beyond where Nurse Family Partnership drops off or populations that Nurse Family Partnership does not reach in that early childhood space as well. If we did the latter, I think we'd also be we will need to come up with some sort of triage function so that you don't have home visitors bumping into each other, calling on the same house. And I think there are ways to do that. But, again, ours was to think sequentially as opposed to trying to do all these things at once, realizing that getting one program established within the state budget is a challenge. And if you try to get several at the same time, you might confuse policymakers and it might be counterproductive. So that was our thinking. I'm not sure if it's the right thinking, but that's the way we're looking at it.
I mean, the way I was thinking, if I may say anything here, the way I was thinking about this is to have a central clearinghouse of who's receiving what type of information or what type of intervention, and that somehow would be an important piece for people to be able to identify. And I mean, if you imagine the situation in which this really succeeds and that there are many programs that are being offered, I mean, the numbers of children that need this is so large that you can presumably be able to decompose the gains associated with each different intervention. And each different intervention has a counterpart of an investor that actually put up some money. But you need to find out, you would need to have a central clearinghouse where people are identified in terms of who received what types of intervention.
Flavio, this is Erica, and I think you make a great point. In the state of South Carolina, when we initially began exploring this kind of, you know, after Joe and Megan completed the feasibility study and it was handed over to the state and we began looking at this, the first thing we did was we released a formal request for information to solicit feedback on kind of this exact issue. And, you know, as Rhett said, the initial thinking was we know that Nurse Family Partnership isn't the only intervention and it doesn't serve all the mothers in the Medicaid population in South Carolina. And is there a continuum of care where we can assess individuals for risk and assign them to an intervention proportional to that risk? So that was kind of the initial groundwork and idea. And we got a lot of feedback from different parties involved. And a lot of this led to, while it probably is the ideal implementation, it does take time and energy to build up that capacity and to build up something like a central clearinghouse that would track all of that. It also does complicate the structure of a pay-for-success contract. So I think that some other states, and I think we'll begin to see this as the pay-for-success and SIB models expand throughout the country, I think that you'll see that some of these contracts are getting more complex and are taking approaches similar to the one you're describing. In South Carolina, we're moving forward with the first project that will probably focus on just one home visiting intervention, but it definitely is something that we did consider and that, as I said, hopefully we'll begin to see these more complex structures begin to evolve as states have a better grasp on how to develop these projects and how to implement these projects.
Let me just explore with Erica a little bit and the group a couple of issues here. In states that don't have a sort of established nurse family partnership program, but they do have other prenatal interventions, some that are done as sort of a counseling of groups of mothers, some are even ones that involve texting over a cell phone. These would, in order to be suitable for a pay-for-success finance structure, would have to involve some sort of longitudinal studies with reasonable
comparative statistical rigor that runs over at least, say, 3 or 4 or 5 years, I would think. If just for the group as a whole, maybe, Rhett, what would be the criteria that would enable, the Duke Endowment to become sort of forward-leaning on participating in a project that involves something other than nurse-family partnership?
Well, I think you've touched upon it. Obviously, the quality of the research would be one of the primary issues. And then this whole idea of having the capacity to replicate the model consistently from one site to the next, I think, is a critical piece. And frankly, it's a piece that I think a lot of effective interventions lack. And so what happens is they tend to vary from one site to the next, and there's some customization, all of which is human nature, by the way, and natural. But what that does, it kind of diminishes your certainty a little bit in terms of whether you can achieve the same outcomes that were achieved through a more rigorous examination, randomized control trial, et cetera. So those two things, the strong data and the infrastructure, if you will, to make sure you replicate it consistently from one site to the next, I think are two certainly things that we look at.
I think then that I'd like to just explore a little bit the matter of social finances and third sector partners, two of the leading new social investment banks, what the process will be for assessing which of the two banks you pursue, how you evaluate them, that sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about that, Joe?
Sure. I mean, I would say that is, you know, certainly a decision that is being made state by state. Certainly there are a lot of factors in different states and communities that go into that consideration. You know, we certainly made no recommendations in the feasibility study. Our interest is in developing this vertical, as I call it. If you consider that the field is being developed along verticals and along horizontals, the horizontals are the banks, the intermediary organizations, the evaluators, and others, developing the capacities that we need for pay-for-success financing nationally. And then the verticals are the sectors or the various fields, and so certainly Ready Nation has been a leader in developing the vertical around early childhood. That's where we stand, and so, you know, we have been focused on working with all the partners out there, all the players out there who are working along this horizontal, as we seek to develop the vertical of pay for success for early childhood.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's conclude. We're getting towards the end, but each one of the speakers sort of take a moment and just kind of recap your own perceptions of this. But let's start again, Erica, with you and Rhett and Joe, and then Megan, if you'll sort of bring us to the conclusion, that would be terrific. So, Erica, what is your sort of summation of your sense of both what is happening in South Carolina and is what's happening nationally in early childhood applications of pay-for-success finance?
Sure. You know, it's really interesting. It's a, you know, exciting topic to think about. And when I first learned of what a social impact bond was, you know, probably about 3 years ago, and started doing some early work on the topic, I mean, everything was focused on these recidivism projects. And I think that the progression towards other areas and the huge interest in early childhood has been really exciting to see. And I've, you know, I continue to talk to people at, you know, different events and at conferences about pay for success, and there's just so much excitement around the concept in general, but then also around early childhood. So I think it's an exciting and emerging kind of field to be in. You know, I'm excited to be working here in South Carolina, and I'm definitely interested in learning more about what what's going on in other states, whether that be early childhood or otherwise. So if I can be a resource for anyone, you know, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'd be happy to share my contact information with anybody on this call. I think it's just exciting and look forward to, you know, the future both here in South Carolina and, you know, across the country.
Well, thank you, Erica. Rhett?
Yeah, I think I would just summarize my thoughts by saying that I believe there are considerable risks with this in terms of, and most of those are associated with scaling an effective intervention. That being said, I think it's a risk that we as a society need to take. We need to figure out a way to take some of these effective interventions, to take them to scale and make sure they can reach more families, in this case, mothers and children. I think it's important, you know, you often think about where government has its resources, and understandably, most of government's resources are reactionary, meaning they're in response to something occurring, and they don't really have the luxury or the resources to put money upstream toward prevention. And I think this model allows for a parallel investment over time to create requisite savings that can make it easier for government to then transfer savings into an intervention program. So I think that's an important aspect of this pay for success financing that I'm excited about exploring.
Yes, it literally is an education process in and of itself. It teaches people what the value of prevention versus remediation is.
Right.
Yes. Joe?
Sure. First, I thank you again, Rob, for your leadership in putting together this call and with the working group here. I think I would just add that this is a tremendous opportunity for the state of South Carolina to improve outcomes for our children using this innovative financing to scale programs that, like Nurse Family Partnership, that have proven benefits. I think it's also a tremendous moment for early childhood pay for success. As Erica mentioned, you know, the early on, a lot of focus on recidivism. It's exciting to now think about taking the next step with more early childhood projects beyond the Utah project that is already underway. Certainly want to commend your leadership, Rob, and Ready Nations for all the work that y'all are doing nationally on this. Certainly been a resource to us, and I would encourage others to take advantage of those resources. And I would just add that the upcoming Ready Nation conference that will be in Charlotte, North Carolina at the end of the month, where we have teams from 16 states, 17 different teams from 16 states coming for very intensive training around pay for success because they want to go back to their state and do early childhood projects. It is wonderfully exciting, and it's a great opportunity for the field.
Yeah, I feel the same way. My head's swimming with the possibilities. We're just starting now to take a look at what's possible in Virginia. And I want to underscore, even though people don't have questions, to underscore that the sort of technical aspects of early childhood health questions, because they involve the healthcare system itself, Medicaid, and the whole architecture of the Health Care Reform Act and the provisions in that act that press forward the ideas of remediation savings, shared savings, bundled purchasing, and the like. All of that architecture can be pulled into these transactions, and I think ultimately will be the kinds of things that make them successful. Megan, you've got the last word.
Great. Well, I want to echo what others have said about the value of kind of shifting attention of government and other stakeholders to prevention instead of remediation. And I feel that even if this specific financing mechanism didn't end up taking off in a large way, that there's already a lot of value created in the attention that's being brought now to cost-benefit analysis and to the importance of prevention, and also to the importance of measuring and creating accountability for outcomes. It's something that we've always wanted to do, but it takes a lot of work to do that, some of which is pretty unpleasant work with databases and things like that. And it's happening now as people are trying to prepare for pay-for-success transactions. So I think good will come of it regardless. I do think it will happen because we've gone from one deal to four in the United States in about a year. And in early childhood, we have Utah in pre-K and hopefully South Carolina and other early childhood interventions and the work that Ready Nation and the Institute for Child Success are doing. I'm confident that this financing will only grow.
Yes, I am too. So thanks to all four of you. Thanks, Chris, for your help in moderating the call. Let me now bring this to an end, and thanks to everybody for being on the call and participating with us in developing this new methodology for improving the life success of America's kids. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.